This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina is changing its job screening process for correctional officers. For the last few years, all applicants had to do face-to-face psychological interviews. Now, only a fraction of applicants will be doing those interviews, and prison officials say the changes will help hire officers more quickly and save money. Critics say it's a dangerous move. Gavin Off reported on the story for the Charlotte Observer. He's a data reporter there, and he joins me now from WFAE in Charlotte. Welcome back, Gavin.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So tell us about this change now. What's changing in this process?
Yeah, in April, just last month, the contract from DPS, Department of Public Safety, which oversees the prisons, ended with a group called the FMRT Group. And that is a psychological and medical screening service that the prisons use to screen applicants before they began working at the prisons.
So that ended. And what were they doing now? Because the part of this included face-to-face interviews, right?
Yeah, the FMRT group on all applicants, I think it was around 10,000 since 2015, would do face-to-face psychological interviews. And what the prison system is doing now is doing a psychological test on all applicants and about 250 face-to-face psychological interviews a year on applicants. So just a fraction of what the FMRT group used to do.
All right.
And that worries some people.
Well, we'll talk about the worries in a minute, but why is the corrections department saying they're making the change?
Well, the contract ended for one, but the prison said, one, it could save the state money, possibly $1 million a year. It should also save the state time in hiring these correctional officers. There's a vacancy rate last December of 18% for correctional officer positions at the state prisons. And in the state's case now, they'll be able to hire folks locally and have their medical screening locally as opposed to going to regional offices. And finally, the state says they don't have any data showing that the applicants that the FMRT group gave them are any better than the applicants that they would be getting under this new system.
All right. And so that's what the state is saying. The corrections folks, when they learned that we were going to talk about this, they sent us a statement, and they said that the safety and security are our top priority in the screening process, and it will enable us to maintain our standard of recruiting and selecting high-quality applicants. And they stressed that all applicants will undergo psychological screening and that their process meets the standards of North Carolina state law. So that's their statement. What are the critics of this change saying, and why are they saying it's dangerous?
Well, they say a couple things. And first and foremost, they say a face-to-face interview with the psychologist can point out problems that you can't identify on a test. A half-hour interview, for example, they say can point out if an applicant has ties to a gang or has financial problems or a history of drug abuse or alcohol abuse. And of course, if you have an officer who goes into the prisons with those kind of backgrounds, it could make them more susceptible to being bribed by inmates. And they said that from 2015 to up until this past April, around 11% of the applicants they interviewed were found to be not suitable psychologically for prison work, and around 7% were not suitable medically for prison work.
All right. And you say from 2015, and that's when actually this program with the face-to-face psychological interviews began. I think there was a pilot in 2014, which is to say we haven't had it all that long. For most of our history, we've done without it. How does it compare to other states? Do many other organizations and corrections departments use this kind of face-to-face interviewing?
Yeah. I think in 2017, DPS surveyed 30 states, and it's my understanding that 12 states, including North Carolina at the time, used a more in-depth evaluation process, and 18 states did not. So we were among the top tier, and what the FMRT group says is, you know, we should stay there in part because that's what the International Association of Police Chiefs recommends, and that's what even North Carolina Criminal Justice Education and Training Standards recommend as well.
All right. Those are the recommendations. Do we have any other kind of objective data about the value and the quality of these kinds of face-to-face screenings?
Good question. I know just from reporting on the prisons for the past 2 or 3 years now, my colleague Ames Alexander and I found a lot of examples of officers getting fired for pretty unacceptable behavior, providing inmates with cell phones, neglecting inmates, abusing inmates, having gangs ties to inmates. Now, that may be still going on, but it was certainly not uncommon just several years ago.
Yeah, and some of the problems, and again, problems with retention as well. It's a difficult job. We're talking about pay levels. We'll get to that, some of that stuff in just a second. But I guess that speaks to perhaps the argument that we've done without it for most of our history. You might say, well, but the record isn't that great for much of your history. So perhaps, you know, this argues that, you know, some greater standard might be in order. And I guess that's the other half of that argument.
Yeah, yeah. And you're exactly right that, you know, they're looking at an 18% vacancy rate for officers. They hire around 1,800 officers a year, but they lose just the same amount. So they can't make up that ground. And I think the state is hoping that getting more people in there more quickly might actually do that.
And, of course, the ultimate question is what kind of people and are they qualified and are we going to see
exactly
a repeat of some of the many problems that you and your colleague have reported on? What are they saying in the legislature about this?
Good question. Senator Bob Steinberg, he's from the eastern part of the state. He's been a sort of a critic, yet a champion of the prison system for a long time. His quote to me is, we don't want to go back to the way it was. He understands some of the problems. And Senator Floyd McKissick from the Durham area said it sounds like this new standard, which was their old standard, doesn't live up to the same level of evaluation for the potential applicants.
Are they talking about at the same time, you know, addressing some of the other issues that might be part of the retention and this vacancy problem? I think pay might be one of them, but not the only problem.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what this legislature will do. I know that's been a topic for a long time. And to be fair, the officers have seen increases in their pay in recent years. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the median might be in the high 30s, 38,000 a year or so. But they have been taking steps to try to retain these folks with providing them with not only more pay, but sort of a mentorship program where a young officer would be teamed up with an older officer to learn the ropes, so to speak.
I'm talking with Gavin Off, a data reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and joining the conversation now is his colleague, Ames Alexander. Ames is an investigative reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and he has been working on a story about probation officer dismissals. Welcome back, Ames.
Thanks for having us.
I'm going to talk in general about what you found about the number of dismissals since 2016, but I guess the story started for you when you learned about one particular case. Tell us about that.
Yeah, got a tip that there was one probation officer who was basically squeezing money out of the offenders he was supervising. So I decided to request dismissal letters for probation officers over the last few years just to see what it showed. I wanted to see not only did this happen in this one case, but was there a broader problem? So that's kind of what got me going on it.
Well, talk about the case that got you going, Thomas Aker. What were the details around that case?
Okay, so probation officers often monitor people who are on house arrest. And Thomas Aker had a guy he was supervising who was requesting some additional time out of the house so he could work more hours so that he could visit family. And what Mr. Aker allegedly did was basically ask this guy to pay money in exchange for that additional leave time. And he even sent a text message to the guy saying, basically, you have to pay to play.
Okay, and where's that case now? What's happened to Thomas Aker?
He got fired for doing that. And there, you know, he'd been with Department of Public Safety for a long, long time, but he's no longer with them now.
So tell us what you found when you asked for dismissal letters.
From 2016 on, there were about 35 dismissals that we saw. And for a range of things, but there were some other there were some other cases in there that really raised my eyebrows. There was one probation officer who allegedly was acting as an unlicensed gun dealer, in fact, had sold a 45 caliber pistol to a guy who used the gun to kill his wife and then himself. There was another case where there was a probation officer got in a verbal confrontation with another motorist who had cussed him out, and this probation officer started chasing the guy in rural western North Carolina at 90 miles an hour. And apparently this went on for quite a while, this chase. There was another case where a probation officer got in a verbal confrontation with a woman in a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot and pulled her service weapon on them. So we're seeing, you know, some cases where probation officers aren't acting in the way that you would expect these officials to act.
Ames Alexander, investigative reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Thank you so much, Ames.
Thank you.
And Gavin Off, a data reporter for the paper. They both joined us from WFAE. Thanks so much, Gavin.
Thanks for having me.
You can find links to their reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, struggling to put a hot, healthy meal on the table every night. There's a lot of pressure to do it. Are we blaming the victim in this conversation about nutritious eating? We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.